You're listening to Agriculture Today.
A new livestock checkpoint in Nuevo León, Mexico, stopped the calf carrying New World screwworm, and the larvae already dead. Now, under Mexico's reinforced rules, all animals receive a double treatment. That's ivermectin plus a larvicidal bath. Inspectors treated and checked the full load of 85 head and found no other cases. Officials said this incident, separate from the September 20th detection, which was declared officially inactive over the weekend after tracing wound care on thousands of animals, trapping, and sterile fly releases. Now, on the U.S. side, regulators conditionally approved Dectamax CA1 for prevention and treatment of screwworm in cattle with 21 days of reinfestation protection. The move is meant to get producers a tool now while full effectiveness data are finalized. Label restrictions and withdrawal times still apply, and veterinarians are urging targeted use as part of an integrated parasite plan to help avoid resistance. With a partial federal shutdown still in effect, Congress has a short runway to protect ag before year end. By the latest calendars, the House has 36 working days left in 2025, and the Senate has 39. It's time that will have to be covered reopening USDA and resolving the farm bill to prevent a new year shock to markets and county services. What are on the to-do list? Well, reopen USDA. That's passing the Ag FDA spending bill or a continuing resolution so that Farm Service Agency and NRCS field offices can process loans and program signups. Meat and poultry inspections remain fully supported, and WIC SNAP avoids strain from stop-start funding. Farm bill or extension by January 1st without action, policy reverts to permanent law. That would trigger the dairy cliff, which is government purchases driving milk prices sharply higher and raising parity supports for crops like corn, wheat, and cotton until a new bill passes. And to protect at-risk programs, crop insurance continues under permanent authority, and many conservation dollars run through 2031, but rural development, trade promotion, research, specialty crops, and energy authorities are vulnerable without reauthorization. Well, when farm margins collapse, the stakes aren't just acres and balance sheets, they're lives. University of Arkansas researchers warn that mounting input costs, low commodity prices, tariffs, labor gaps, and volatile weather are pushing more families into crisis. In the 12 months ending June 30th, 282 Chapter 12 farm bankruptcies were filed nationwide. Represents a 56% year-over-year increase. South logged 101 cases, that's 36% of the total, but a 68% rise. Studies show farmers often cope in silence due to stigma, and CDC estimates say farmer suicide rates are 350% higher than the national average. If you know someone who needs help right now, Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is just 988. There's also an Agri-Stress Helpline and Farm Aid available. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The U.S. oil crushing industry has added about $6 billion worth of infrastructure over the course of the last 24 months.
Ed Prosser is Senior Vice President of Special Projects with Schooler, talking about the growth of canola.
This is built around the need for vegetable oil in renewable fuels, most notably renewable diesel. And those markets were really active in 22 and 23 and into early 24. There has been some government uncertainty around certain policies over the course of the last 24 months. We seem to be getting that sorted out. A couple of the proposals that have come out of the EPA recently have demanded domestic ring fences for feedstocks. So we believe that we're still on a trajectory to take carbon out of the fuel stream and have a domestic product help us do that. We still think that the farmer has a role to play in energy policy. And as oil becomes the preferred commodity for that, oil expresses itself in the crush as a bigger part of the value. This is where canola shines, because canola has twice as much oil as soybeans. Soybeans are 80% meal and 20% oil, and canola is 40% and 60% meal. So it's a much better, as oil leads the crush, it's a much better crop. And Mike's work, the industry's work around how much oil content particular seeds have is a trait that we certainly pay very much attention to, because it can change the value of the crop pretty quickly. But the reason that Schooler invested in Kansas and going through, because it is a hard lift to get a new crop. But the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is really producing vegetable oil on the Great Plains. And that's really why we've been so intensely interested on what the oil content is, because it is so important as we go forward. It's very much a quality trait like we would think of with protein and wheat, or, you know, the milling quality of wheat. It's just it's a kind of a new quality standard that farmers have to deal with.
Mike Stom is a canola breeder at Kansas State.
Oil is in a seed is produced at the tail end of the grain filling period for canola. It's really kind of the last thing that's placed in the seed, so to speak. So there's a genetic component to oil. We certainly see there are certain genetic backgrounds where you see a higher oil content. But then you also have to think about, what is the weather like when that grain is filling? And then, are my management practices on the farm balancing this out? Am I doing what I need to do to protect the crop so that the oil content remains high? And so, you know, we think about swathing the crop prior to harvest or direct harvesting. Well, typically, if we direct harvest a canola crop, we'll generally see a slightly higher oil content than if we swath. So we're really trying to protect that oil content, whether you're swathing or direct cutting. We need to make sure that those are timely operations and not impacting the oil content. I would say we have seen a trend towards more people direct harvesting canola in the state because they want to move away from the swathing operation. And so I think in general, that's going to benefit the crop as we move forward. And we have more varieties now that allow us to direct harvest. We have better what we call pod integrity. So those types of things, working hand in hand with our management practices, and then, you know, factoring in the weather, that's ultimately going to affect the oil content of the crop.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You know, cattle markets have, they've kind of taken a little bit of a pause here lately, broadly speaking. We've seen a little bit of pullback. I think this is just the market kind of taking a breath in many cases.
So far, year-to-date, live cattle futures up 19%, feeder cattle up 35%, but cash cattle has been retreating. Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State livestock economist.
And obviously, it depends a little bit on whether you look at the futures markets or the cash markets, but kind of across the board, I think we're just kind of, summer's over, we're sort of transitioning to fall and winter markets, and markets are just kind of taking a little breather. You know, we've seen a fairly dramatic decline in boxed beef prices in the past few weeks. Now that's from, record levels. And so they're still pretty high. But I think a lot of eyes are on it because we've seen a fairly persistent decline here lately. So we're sort of looking at where will this thing stabilize. I do expect it to do that. I don't think we're talking about massive changes in demand as much as we are, I think, transitioning again from sort of summer markets with a grilling focus to fall markets. Different products kind of take the forefront here. And we're already, seeing some movement towards the holiday period when we'll be pricing in a lot of things like ribeyes or rib rolls for holiday products. So I think there's just some transition going on in that market. I do think we're seeing a little bit of shifting in terms of maybe some of the margin issues in the industry. Packing industry, of course, has struggled with their margins for many months now and continues to. But part of what may be happening with this boxed beef market could be the fact that as beef production has declined more dramatically in the last few weeks, or really the last few months, some of that pressure now for margins is going to shift towards the retail side. And so I think maybe some of what we're seeing here might be that combined with, again, just the seasonality, the time of year that we are. And so I think, again, I think it's a matter of sort of transitioning in the market. Seasonally, we normally see a lot more culling in the fall. It's the time of the year. We have noticed that some producers sold calves early, at least in Oklahoma and in some areas. We've seen some early selling of calves, and that could be followed by early culling kinds of things or where we're checking these cows. But in general, we expect to see seasonally, we expect to see some increase in cow culling as we get into the fall. There again, we've seen some pressure on those cull cow prices, but pretty minimal up to this point.
But what about the feeder situation? Peel says,
we were actually in several feedlots out in the Texas Panhandle recently with a group of extension folks from Florida, and they were specifically looking at sort of where do those Florida calves go when they leave Florida. They almost all leave. Where do they end up? And so they were trying to learn sort of the other end of that market. It was an interesting discussion. But in general, feedlots obviously have been increasingly concerned with the numbers of feeder cattle. Most of these feedlots are seeing their numbers decline, and we're seeing that broadly speaking, that feedlots are going to have a hard time maintaining inventory. And so there's a lot of effort to try to find cattle. And then, of course, the cost of these feeder cattle, even with very attractive cost to gain, feed cost is cheap. We've got a record corn crop coming. That's an advantage. But the cost of the feeder cattle is a real challenge. And so I think feedlots are anticipating that they're going to see more struggles in the coming months compared to maybe what they've been able to do up to this point.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's day six of the partial government shutdown. There's no end in sight right now.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX.
The longest partial government shutdown we've seen in history is a 35-day shutdown that started in December of 2018 and lasted into January of 2019. And that cost our economy an estimated $3 billion or 0.02% of GDP. So that's why the stock market really doesn't seem too concerned about it. We've seen very little effect there. The expectation there is we're going to have rate cuts from the Federal Reserve in the absence of any inflation data prior to the government reopening again. The focus will be on the last jobs numbers that we got, and that was the private sector ADP report, which showed job contraction during the month of September. So overall, the markets feel this sense of confidence that we're going to be looking at an accelerated rate cut cycle. I think their enthusiasm for such may be a little bit overdone, but, you know, it's perception is reality on Wall Street. And that's what they're basing it on. So how does this affect the commodity markets? Well, first of all, we did have OPEC Plus, I should say, over the weekend, and they decided to cut production to increase production less than anticipated for the month of November. They're going to add another 137,000 barrels per day. It was widely believed that Saudi Arabia was looking for a larger increase, maybe double, triple, or maybe even quadruple that level. But there wasn't enough member support for that. And some of that may be because of the decrease in prices that we saw going into last week in anticipation of a bigger hike in production and members fearing that they would put too much downward pressure on if they increased output too much. Meanwhile, Ukraine continues to strike at Russian infrastructure, and that is having an impact on what they're able to refine. Most of their strikes are on refinery infrastructure. And so you say, okay, that's more crude oil to export, but right now they're nearing what is believed to be capacity for exports currently. And so can they even increase it that much more? So that's the key question. And if they can't, and we continue to see pressure on their refineries, Russia may have to start ratcheting down output. And so that's a concern going forward.
Then you've got the president set to meet with President Xi of China.
I hope he gets a trade deal. I hope that I'm wrong on that, but right now I remain skeptical as I observe President Xi and how he's been managing this situation. So those are things we're watching this week. The flow of economic data is rather small this week. We do have a WASDE report that was scheduled for Thursday this week. That's a world crop report. World supply and demand crop report that has been suspended until further notice. Right now, we see no evidence of the shutdown making significant progress because neither party has the 60 votes necessary to bring a funding measure to the floor for a vote. So when you see that both Republican and Democratic plans for funding government have failed, they haven't failed. They haven't even been able to vote on them because they failed to get enough votes to bring them to the floor for discussion and a vote. That takes 60 votes. And so we continue in that deadlock. No indication of a meaningful movement on that yet at this point. And it's my intention, or not my intention, but my belief that if we are still in a partial shutdown a week from now, that USDA will seriously be looking at canceling the October WASDE report as they did in 2013.
It's Agriculture Today.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
In the past 3 years, we've been dealing with all kinds of diseases across the dairy industry, both in the U.S. and EU.
Director of Dairy Marketing Insight for StoneX, Matt Donay.
In the U.S., we've had novel things like bird flu showing up in the dairy cows for the first time ever. Now, luckily, bird flu here in the U.S. hasn't been much of an issue this year. But the new concern is around the New World screwworm. This is a parasitic fly that lays its eggs in open wounds of warm-blooded animals. And now this is a little bit graphic, but the eggs hatch and then the larvae effectively eat their hosts. The screwworm used to be endemic to the southern half of the U.S., so we've dealt with this before, but it was eradicated from North America back in the 1970s. It's now making a comeback. It's come back up through Latin America, and it's been found just 70 miles south of the border between Mexico and the U.S. So there's a decent chance that it makes it into the U.S. From the experts that I've read, they think it's a 50-50 chance that it eventually makes it into the U.S. What impact it will have on milk production if it does get here is really hard to say. It depends on how widespread it becomes and what measures we have to treat it. The other issue could be that the government puts into place restricted movement zones where cows and cattle cannot be moved around the U.S. as easily as they typically are. And that might be an issue for the industry as well. So there's fears, there's legitimate fears. But it's really hard to say what impact it will have if it makes it here.
And what is the impact of trade and tariffs?
A customer asked me a very similar question earlier this week. They said, what have been the noticeable impacts of the trade wars this year? And or what impact have the trade wars had? And frankly, it's really hard to point to any real large impacts. We did have some month-to-month volatility. When China put an additional 100%, more than 100% tariff on U.S. dairy imports, we did see U.S. dairy exports to China collapse for a month. But then when China dropped those additional tariffs, we saw U.S. exports to China surge. We also have a little bit of a strange anomaly with butter trade flow statistics between Europe and the U.S., where we're probably going to see some strange movements in butter import numbers for the U.S. But if you zoom out and look at things at an annual level, it looks like U.S. imports will probably be a little bit lower than they otherwise would have been since the U.S. has had additional tariffs on our imports. And our exports might be slightly lower than they otherwise would have been just given the uncertainty around the trade policy. But there isn't much in terms of massive noticeable impacts at an annual level. And in fact, when you look at some of these commodities, our cheese exports, U.S. cheese exports are going to be record high this year. U.S. casein exports look record high. Our butter exports, they're not quite going to be record high, but we're talking about 100, 200% increases in butter exports thanks to very cheap U.S. cheese and butter prices this year.
He looks at the outlook for dairy.
From a long-term perspective, the U.S. population grows about 1% per year. Per capita dairy consumption grows by about 0.5% per year. So if U.S. milk production is growing at about 1.5%, the rule of thumb is that's a pretty balanced market. Over the last couple of months here, U.S. milk production has been growing over 3%, and with the expansion in the dairy herd that we've seen, we're probably going to continue to grow over 3%, at least through the end of this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
One of the things that kind of continued to hold the market up, even though we've had a lot of things from just the economy, as we've talked about, kind of potential slowdowns in the market from as far as total supply, has really been consumer demand.
Elliot Dennis is a University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist.
You know, these prices, I think the Meat Demand Monitor, which all of producers fund through kind of checkoff dollars, is housed at Kansas State University, really show that kind of these prices continue to remain high for consumers. And what's been really incredible is that even though the prices have remained high, that consumers continue have not really changed quantity of products consumed, which is really kind of this new phase I think we're kind of entering, that people are continuing to have a strong desire to continue to consume beef even at higher prices. And we think kind of where we're at moving into the third quarter, if we're going to be kind of have that same relative movement as we can expect some of the highest third quarter retail beef demand that we have ever experienced. In the first quarter compared to 24 to 25, we were up about 10 points. From 24 to 25 for quarter two, we were up about 12 points. So the index is at 124 right now from last year, 2024. So what we can anticipate for essentially for 2025 is when we look at kind of a lot of those prices is would be almost 134. That would be the highest by a long shot that we've ever experienced kind of in this third quarter. Everything indexed against, 2000, which means we basically have 34% larger demand today than we had back in 2000. And previous to last year, the largest demand that we ever had was in 2020, which was during COVID. And then that was also at 124. But prior to that year, we hadn't broken 110 since about 2004. So we're talking about all-time record demand. And people are continuing to purchase beef products regardless of the price. And I think we're really entering in a new phase of beef consumption in the United States.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
We're really just looking at the overall tone. Structurally looks bullish. You got the tight supplies everybody knows about. You got the lower slaughter numbers. You've got relatively high global meat prices. You've got some short-term momentum that looks a little negative, but we'll keep an eye on that. Feeder cattle prices, they're supported by tight supply and the border disruptions. And we'll just have to see how this plays out over the near term. If we dig into those a bit more, granted, we're going to have a lack of data because we're going to have some data gaps from the U.S. government shutdown. We're not going to get, at this point, we'll see how things evolve, right? But cattle on feed, cold storage could be affected, weekly slaughter and box beef updates, other price and inventory reports all could be in the dark until we get past this. So we're going to be watching and gleaning through contacts where cash appears to be trading, get an idea from that. And then over, just overall, the market's been solid and I don't see anything in the supply and demand situation for cattle that wouldn't outlast this government shutdown. This is not our first government shutdown. There's been a number of them in the past. Some have lasted for as long as, if I can recall correctly, about 30 to 35 days or so. Some as short as 1 or 2 days. So buckle yourself in. It is what it is.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.